think about responsible Arab and Muslim leaders, Americans, which I am, after 9/11. Mm-hmm. We did everything we could to say they are not us. Right. Whatever they're saying, yeah. they are not us. Mm-hmm. And to say that is a cancer on a religion and on an ethnicity.
That was Juliette Kayyem, who was the former assistant secretary for Homeland Security and is a Harvard fellow chair, a terrorism expert, talking about sort of making an analogy between those that got involved in the insurrection on January 6th at the Capitol and those that bombed the World Trade Center in 9/11. And her point being, obviously, you know, a few bad apples shouldn't spoil a bunch, meaning, you know, just like after 9/11, you know, a lot of Arabs and Muslims had to say that's a specific group of people doing those terrible things. It's not, don't paint us with a broad brush and say we're all those types of people. She's saying the same thing here regarding, you know, conservatives or Republicans that might, you know, believe in conservative issues and policies, but aren't part of that insurrection group. This, I wanted to have her on. I think she's really, really talented and smart in this area of domestic terrorism, which is obviously on everybody's agenda now, given, you know, what happened on January 6th. So this was a really interesting and eye-opening conversation for me. I hope it is for you. She really knows her stuff and has some interesting takes and a couple that surprised me, which you'll see. On a personal note, I can't wait until I can get back to normal and working, because I just spent 2 hours before I'm recording this. I spent 2 hours searching for videos on YouTube in terms of how to install a aluminum Louisville attic ladder, and specifically how many lag bolts you're supposed to put in the pivot plate. Okay, did you take that in? Okay, that is the sign of a man who needs to be working full time again. So, I can't wait till this pandemic is over, because the only thing I have to look forward to is heating up this Pizzeria Uno frozen pizza I bought, deep dish. And I know it's not going to be the same as in the restaurant, because it never is. And, you know, I'll be crestfallen and, you know, and then just, you know, like, why did I do it? And then there'll be a whole conversation in my head. This is going way far afield. Hope you like this interview with Juliette Kayyem. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week is someone who has a really great perspective on national security issues, especially given what's been going on in our country. She is a former Deputy Homeland Security advisor under President Obama, is a faculty chair, not just the faculty people, faculty chair of the Homeland Security program at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. And that's not an online school. That's a real school.
That's a real one.
And
online now, though.
And Juliette Kayyem, great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, and I love your set. It's beautiful. Much better than my. This is just something we got in Italy on our honeymoon. All right. Anyway, I want to jump in. You wrote a piece recently for The Atlantic. Biden is now officially our president. Trump is gone, obviously, at least from the White House. And you talked about coalitions not thriving without their leader, right? And you said the way to unite this country is to isolate acts of violence and the leader who incites it from legitimate expression. Trump was a North Star for a certain kind of radical. Americans will be safer the more that star loses its shine. I don't usually like to start an interview with a guest is disagreeing, but I think he goes away, but doesn't go away. That coalition's still out there. And maybe some are upset with him because he didn't march down to the Capitol with him and blah, blah, blah. But he can do a lot of damage outside.
And what are your thoughts on that? So, I mean, the way to think about it is, the way to think about what has happened is not Trump incites violence. It's much more specific than that. He operationalizes terrorism. So we have to think about him as, and I'm careful about my language. I don't call him a terrorist, like, because then I get into a big fight. That he is the leader. He is the operational and motivational leader of a violent domestic terrorism group That's not all of his supporters. It's not even all of MAGA. In fact, one of the untold stories of January 6th was how small the rally was before it. Some elements of it went up the hill to the Capitol. I mean, this was supposed to be his last stance rally, and he can only get a couple thousand people there. But that element will still exist. And so then you have to ask yourself, well, as the terrorist organization, we're in a major counterterrorism effort right now. It was very intense leading up to the inauguration with 25,000 National Guard and all sorts of things. But it's not, but it will continue. You're right. And it will continue in various forms, lone wolf, organized, sense of, you know, disempowerment. But what's the one precondition that's necessary for any, this is out of counterterrorism studies, for any terrorist organization to begin to become less relevant and therefore less violent? And that is that its leader no longer is a winner. I mean, in other words, that he has no ability to recruit, because terrorist organizations like to be on the winning side. He has no ability to organize. He has no ability to communicate. That he begins to be isolated, or that he continues to be isolated. And so, for example, I view the impeachment vote not through the lens of politics or unity or some technical legal thing about whether a president, you know, can be impeached after he's no longer president. I don't care, right, any of those. I view through the lens of counterterrorism. It is another form of isolation. It's not going to solve everything, but it's a precondition.
Well, and you actually say the history of counterterrorism suggests that letting Trump off easily is exactly the wrong strategy. Yeah. You need to make it, you say, quote, make it impossible for the group to get oxygen again. But my concern is, there is a view that Charlottesville sort of brought a lot of these groups together and essentially created a network, right? Because they were realizing we were operating independently as these disparate groups, and they became stronger as a result. And I don't see how that goes away.
Oh.
And so the problem is, from within, it's the exact opposite of what you want in the Republican Party. Like, there's no, other than Trump, there's no one in the Republican Party that can say to these people, stop, we're done, go take a time out. This isn't what this is. It's the opposite. There are insurgent leaders, in my opinion, in the government right now, in Congress, that are going to do the bidding of these groups. And so how do you, as a counterterrorist expert, counter the fact that the insurgents are already in the government,
yeah,
and part of the government that they're trying to overthrow?
So I'm less pessimistic than you, because I mean, in other words, because otherwise, one is, what's your other alternative, right? And the second, yeah, is, I think, is because you're starting to already see in the polling the disconnect between Trump supporters and this violent domestic group. Look, I'm not here to heal the divides of, that divide us, right, as a nation, right? I'm here. So I'm thinking of a tactical organization. And I think so in counterterrorism, and I have to be careful, we call it leadership decapitation, which is if you, that people like Ted Cruz will view it as less beneficial to be Team Trump and insurrectionist if there's all these consequences for having done that. So you're starting to see some of them, right? Some of them is, of course, the criminal prosecutions against those who raided. I think this New Yorker video that shows,
yeah,
the criminals looking through the terrorists, yeah, looking through the scene, it's like, oh, Ted would want us to do that. Like, literally.
And supports the theory that this is a very planned conspiracy, because they're talking about, well, we need this and we don't need that. Yeah. And it's not, yeah, just some kids kind of going, hey, let's have some fun with paper.
Yeah. And I mean, for your viewers and stuff, like, I think it's an odd take. And I'm just saying this because I think because I'm like a half glass full hope person, given the field I'm in. But I think it's a weird view to think that Trump, you know, is this horrible figure, and he, you know, has incited all this stuff, and he's, most importantly, he's nurtured it. And then that his departure doesn't have some influence. I mean, they are related. In other words, his isolation, because he has such influence, he's just a unique and horrible American character. His departure and isolation, if we can keep doing it. Now, one of the interesting things about this counterterrorism effort is just, it's not like normal ones. It's got different pieces. You've got the criminal prosecutions of his supporters, which serves also as a deterrent. It's not just about what they did. You've got the deplatforming. You've got the banks running away from the family. You've got the cabinet members not showing up to the farewell. You've got an apparatus. I mean, whatever. Look,
so this is what you mean when you say it keeps going and it doesn't stop
going.
With him.
Yeah, keep going, because he cannot have a second act.
He's and I think piling this on.
And I do think, you know, sometimes in my moments of deep darkness, yeah, I remember, like, Obama was president just 4 years ago. I mean, your country's ability to mirror leadership will now follow the new president. And one of the things that Trump did is he nurtured this in a way. And people always say, oh, he was both sides-erism. He wasn't both sides. He was one side. Like, both sides-erism lets him get away with it. He was one side.
Right.
And I think having a president who's on the other side will shame in all the ways that we should, right? I think I have no problem with shaming people just so that they're not violent. I'm not going to change their hearts. But a long way of saying, you know, the more Senator Graham talks of unity, the more I talk about isolation, right? They're like, dream on, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, listen, I think Biden came at, my wife is a big believer, maybe more so that things happen for a reason. But for him to come to this place of power in his 70s, I think is a good thing. If he were a young, ambitious 50-something-year-old guy, he may not be so open to bipartisanship. I think he really is looking at this as his last act of getting this country to really heal. I really believe he's going to do that. And it's funny because you talk about this thing called stochastic terrorism. Explain what that is to the viewers, because I thought it was a really interesting take on the analysis of how Trump and people like Trump who lead have operated.
And I think, I mean, I've been sort of, the first time I used the word publicly was 2018. Stochastic just is a fancy, you know, Kennedy school name for random. And it's just a way of describing what Trump was doing, that it wasn't, you know, people knew that he was inciting violence, but it was really different. What he was doing was he was using language to promote, incite terrorism, which is a particular kind of violence. It's a violence for political gain, to support a political ideology, in this case, to keep him in power or to silence his quote unquote enemies, like the media, the Michigan governor, you know, whoever he went out after day after day. And stochastic was just his way of utilizing language, like say, take something like liberate Michigan, in which it's not direct. It doesn't say go kidnap the governor, right? But it's more likely to inspire terror, right? And the people who planned the kidnapping and murder of the governor of Michigan heard what Trump was telling them. They knew exactly what liberate Michigan meant. So it's a way of thinking about what he was doing. Now, I'll be honest with you. After the election, he changed from stochastic to direct. I was very clear about that. He was saying January 6th. He was telling them why they were angry. He was saying, come congregate. He was saying words like fight or we'll be wild.
Right,
he used in a tweet, we'll be wild.
Right, right.
The morning of, he tells them to go stop the steal. Stop exactly by going up to the Capitol.
You gotta fight to keep your country. Fight those words. Fight,
exactly.
Fight.
So all of that to me was direct. It was direct.
Right. And in a way, for a while, he was operating like a mob boss who orders hits, but never is always smart enough to stay two people removed. Right. And then he sort of got into his hits. And so when you have a person, Timothy Snyder of Yale just wrote this piece, American Abyss, for the New York Times. And he talks about that there is a period of time, and we hit it at 2020, where somebody like Trump sort of calls into question, as a lot of dictators do in the Weimar Republic, this happened. You know, you start to call into question institutions, the media, the courts, everything, right? And then and he called it gaming the system, and the Republicans gaming the system. And by the way, I'm not lumping every Republican into that riot either, okay? I know that was a small group, but it's a very vociferous and powerful group. And that's why maybe I'm less optimistic than you are on some level. But so Professor Snyder says, you know, that these Republicans game the system long enough that they start to, that the people in that party start to really believe that there are no rules. And then a guy like Trump comes in and blows it up and says, let's break it. Now, he said it didn't work in 2020. It came close, but it could work in 2024. And he calls this new group, Josh Hawley, for example, people who were raised in that era of no rules, game the system, break the system, and that's all they know. And they're going to just continue this. And so my concern is, what do we do for the next 4 years? Because albeit, okay, you decapitate the head of this thing, okay, in theory, but he's still out there. They're very angry. You're not going to turn this off with a light switch. So, and I'm sure you've... How do you calm them down?
I mean, it's a dimmer. We used to have a major white supremacy problem in this country, right? Lynchings, tens of thousands of lynchings. Right. We didn't end racism, right? Overnight, we didn't end it totally. We're talking about risk reduction now. I mean, that, and I think that's the dark place people get, is that they imagine that things were perfect before. And I think that they're not. I mean, I think we have to think of it as a dimmer. It's hot now, and we have to lower it, which is basically no mercy for anyone involved with the Capitol, right? I mean, whether it's a total isolation, whatever. Does it go away? No, but over time it becomes less toxic. Fewer people are appeal to it. The people get smarter. People are provided, honestly, people are provided off ramps. This is one of the challenges that I think non-Trump people are going to have, is how can people come back into the fold in some way without punishing them? Societies have dealt, what does reconciliation look like? I separate the violent people from others. So I think we can go to a dark place if we delude ourselves to how it was before, but two, if we think the goal is elimination. Now, the goal is just continuing to reduce over 10, 20, 30 years. Because this was mastered by Trump, but it wasn't created by him. I mean, these elements, they just. And I think that if you can view it as a threat that is manageable, once again, this piece, and I'll tell you on the bright side, is look at some of this polling now already as Trump exits left, right? Biden is one of the most popular incoming presidents ever. 65% to 70%.
Trump's approval rating was down to 34%.
Exactly. Yeah. All of that stuff. The number of people now who believe that the election was fair is rising. It's over 65% now. So things do change when the hotness is over. And that's what I think Trump is not going to realize, is how irrelevant he is without chaos. Because that's why we have to continue to isolate him, because the only thing that will make him relevant in the future is if he continues to promote violence. Like, no one's going to turn to Trump about, Iranian policy. I mean, he's not relevant in the, in terms of, like, it's not like you're going to learn something like you might from whether you agreed or disagreed with him from Bush or even Carter, right? Like, all of them, they're relevant because they provide value. There's no value to Trump.
But he did a classic dictator move, right? You find an aggrieved people marginalized. You tell them, you make it about race, which was happening in the Weimar Republic, and anti-Semitism. You sprinkle in a little, like, I'm your savior. You start to get them to believe, as Professor Snyder said, that the system is broken and there are no rules. And voila, right? You have, I mean, we came close. I mean, we're close to, like, and I get that it is a dimmer, and I get that, but sort of like, here's what you just made reference to the New Yorker video that came out. You know, the most alarming piece of video I've seen so far of everything, not the guy sitting at the desk with Pelosi. They're praying. They were praying.
I know.
And when it
I
becomes
know.
When it becomes religious zealots and not just a political belief or right, you're at a whole other level of anger, crazy, do anything. Does that concern you? How do you, I mean, this was almost felt like this was short of them, someone saying, we're doing this in the name of Christianity. That's what it felt like. And when you get to that point, as you know, with religious wars over the centuries, how do you disconnect that part? How do you dim?
You arrest them. They look at them. They're folding like losers.
I want a pardon.
So the fact that they invoke the Bible, do you really think any more than Trump? These guys.
No, I don't think that. I don't think it's, oh, that isn't that nice. I think that they're willing to do anything. Look, we talked off camera. I got COVID. I got COVID in Florida because those clowns wouldn't wear masks, right?
I know.
And I'm very sensitive to this. So I would see people, I don't know, a reporter go up to somebody in line at the for voting, and you're not wearing a mask, you know, Republican, you're not wearing a mask. Well, yeah, you know, you could die. Well, you got to die sometime. I'm here for my guy. That sounded like an Al-Qaeda terrorist. Like, I'm going to die for my guy. Like,
yeah.
So to me, that religion part worries me a little bit, maybe more so than you, but like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, that's going to be an element. I mean, the longer term, and this is where you do get lessons. I mean, one of the most interesting and pathetic things about, here, let me finish my sentence. One of the most pathetic things about this unity drive by Republicans, you know, let's just move on, pretend like it didn't happen, is which will be their narrative as they realize that's the future, is their failure to focus on the violent elements within their world, right? I mean, so like think about responsible Arab and Muslim leaders, Americans, which I am, after 9/11, mm-hmm. we did everything we could to say they are not us.
Right.
Whatever they're saying,
yeah.
they are not us.
Mm-hmm.
And to say that is a cancer on a religion and on an ethnicity. And so that's, you know, one would hope, and you're starting to see elements of that. You're starting to see Republicans now saying that they're gonna, you know, vote for impeachment. You're seeing the polling change. And I think the more we have a president who we can look away from. I know that sounds weird because you and I are clearly both political people, but like,
yeah.
just like, I think Biden's greatest gift might be just like our ability to look away for a little, like what will it be like to wake up on a Sunday where you're like, oh, I'm going to do the, you know, we're still in COVID.
and not rush to the TV and turn on the news channels
to
see
Twitter and stuff.
You literally wake up going, I wonder what blew up. I said to my wife, I said, you know, I worked on The Daily Show as a writer, and I work on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and now I'm doing other things, but you can't, some of this is like, it's like right out of a show or a movie. Like it's enthralling. It's intoxicating. It's scary. And so you're right. I think it would be a relief to just get up and go, let's go for a walk with the dog this morning and not think about all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like, look away. Like, I mean, even me, who's like so political and I love, you know, all of that world and what's happening. It's like, you know, policy is going to work in real time. There won't be surprises every day. Like there'll be like a, you know, interagency discussions. Like it will be like normal again, like normal in the sense, like, you know, every day isn't some banner headline, you know? And I think one of the things why I think Trump has to continue to be isolated in the future, like continue to be, you know, deplatformed everything in the future is because he knows the only way he remains relevant is through inciting violence. He knows that because no one's going to turn to him.
But so what do you do about the Josh Hawley, the Ted Cruzes of the world, the Mo Brooks, who are firmly entrenched in this? Okay. And they do have a voter base that will go to the ends of the earth for Trump. And if it's not Trump, etch out his name, put somebody else's name in. Is it a combination of sort of donor money drying up?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see his voters voting him out. I don't see them getting voted out.
It's a combination of things. Look, it works. Josh Hawley is already
doing the
Trump who. I'm waiting 5 minutes for that one from Ted. Look, I'm not trying to fix them. I don't want to have a beer with them. I don't want to whatever. I just I think so. It is working. I mean, if you look at Josh, if you look at Hawley's comments lately, he's on defense.
Yeah.
He's got he's got his major funders now not willing to give to him. He right. chose unwisely. Now, he may be a senator. I don't think he's going to be the nominee. And the weirdest thing is, like, I'm a big Democrat. I'm uninterested in fixing the Republican Party. It does not right. interest me. But right. that's why it's good to have Biden as president, because he yes. reached out to McConnell. They're going to church together tonight. That is like that's what's going to make him a yeah. better person. So that's the way to think about it. So you're not going to solve everything. There is always going to be a Mo Brooks in Congress. Like there's always yeah. like every Congress has their five or six freaking crazies.
Yeah, but these guys
just recycle. Yeah, I know. Think they let you. We just met, but I think they let people take too much oxygen out of it. Okay. Like he's one freaking congressman in a podunk Alabama district. Like honestly, right. like right. and we've got AOC and Pelosi and all these wonderful people who have much bigger platform. And we give Mo his
too much. Well, I love your pessimism. I know we have to jump.
Of course. I mean,
your optimism. I have more pessimism. I'm sorry.
No, not allowed. Not today. Get Biden in a few weeks.
Last thing, because I know you have to jump. What do we learn from Al-Qaeda and how we've dealt yeah. with them and sort of not crushed them, but sort of certainly brought them down a peg to deal with domestic terrorism? Is there one or two things that we can do here?
Well, it was isolation of the leader. That's what got me to this moment.
Same thing.
It didn't solve it, but it was a precondition. Because what's hard is recruitment.
Got it. Well, oh, okay. This is one. I feel better.
School. You got to give Biden a couple months.
I wish I could give you a hug or something.
Oh,
a virtual
no.
hug.
We'll talk in 3 or 4 months. You're going to feel right. better.
I want you to come back on. It's so okay, fabulous good. To have
so
you
great.
On,
well,
Julia.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you for being on.
All right. There you go. I hope you found that interesting. I thought Juliet had some really, really unique takes on what caused this extremism to come about and what could happen in the future. And I will now leave you to go find something else mundane to do to kill my time while I'm still locked up because of the pandemic. And as usual, check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. And please subscribe to that and to my podcast if you haven't already. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.